Supplemental request, you have before you House Bill number 125, an act making supplemental appropriations and transfers of an allocation and reduction in the FY85 operating budget and providing for an effective date. This bill was introduced at the request of the governor and includes 87 and prior year supplemental appropriations. You have in your packet a proposed draft sponsor substitute dated 3/20/87, prepared by the governor's office, which adds, deletes, and amends items based on new information which became known after the original bill was introduced. I have also prepared a committee, a sectional analysis which compares the original bill to the sponsor substitute. Note the sectional analysis includes only general funds. Today, after hearing testimony from the administration on this bill, it will be in my intention to put it into subcommittee consisting of myself as chair, Representative Pushaw, and Representative Frank. Here to testify on the bill first is Representative Hogan. Also, for the committee members, we have four copies in these whites. They are your backups if you need to look at anything within the supplemental. Mr. Hogan. Put the speaker out there. Just a minute. A mic for Mr. Hogan, please. He might have something worthwhile today. Never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you state your name for the record,
yes,
please,
sir,
and tell us what happened to your eye?
Mr. Chairman, am I under oath? My name is Jay Hogan. I'm Director of Budget Review, and I was trimming some of the brush in the backyard, and one of the alders fought back. So, they tell me, fortunately I don't have to look at it, they tell me it looks a lot worse from the outside than it does from the inside.
You look like me after the session's over. Go ahead, Jay.
Mr. Chairman, we did prepare a draft, Department of Law draft number two. Basically, there are two or three items that were added since the bill was introduced. They are in the last four sections of the draft. I don't know whether you would prefer to go down the items as they're contained in your analysis sheet or go through in bill order or what, whichever you prefer. I'm prepared to go either way.
What's the pleasure of the committee? We can go on, go through the bill. Go on with item number one, and also...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have spoken so quickly.
Go ahead, Representative Frank.
Maybe we should go through your deal so we can see the differences.
Okay. This section. Sure. Also, I've had Sally Smith with Revenue, who would like to testify also whenever we come to those portions. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, in the Department of Administration area, there are basically... no changes from the bill as introduced in January. Longevity bonus payments, an increase is called for there due to additional caseload that was not anticipated at the, appropriation setting of last year. Public defender and public advocacy in part are related to the Peel case, but public advocacy primarily driven there by court-appointed caseload.
Yes.
This is the significant
increase. Okay, we have a question there. It's Representative Frank, and I thought then probably a supplemental also that we had on the Peel case. But
Is it all right if we ask questions?
Yes.
As we go through?
Yes, just ask.
On the public advocates, the caseload increase, does that mean they have to hire new attorneys, or how does that work? Or do they hire by contract attorneys? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Frank, Marsha Hubbard is here and very able to answer detailed questions, but generally the public advocacy has a small staff to handle a variety of legal challenges. However, a good bit of their work is simply in the contract nature. The court will assign a person to a particular case. And basically, public advocacy serves as the bill-paying agent. They don't have a wide degree of latitude or discretion. They have made great strides in recent years in trying to get attorneys under reasonable contract rates in various places in the state. But again, their workload is largely driven by particular circumstances as they appear to the court when a case comes up, and they really don't have a tremendous ability to control their caseload. So most of the supplemental comes from that requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, the item that's new for the Department of Administration is it has one of the elements in the additional miscellaneous claims, the 52-3. All the other items were in the when the bill was introduced. With regard to commerce, that series for commerce is exactly as introduced in the original bill in January. One item that has been brought up for discussion is the possibility, should the legislature feel so persuaded, of changing the funding for the APA Anchorage Fairbanks Intertie claim settlement from general fund to Rail Belt Energy. The governor chose not to make that recommendation at this time, but would certainly be sympathetic should it be the legislature's desire to do so.
Representative Prisho.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you explain further the possibility of reimbursement for this money? It's my understanding there is another suit that the state will be pursuing to recover some or more of these monies.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not very conversant with that. I do recall the issue coming up, but it was our feeling that it was not really certain enough to be able to count on, and thus we chose to introduce an appropriation to cover these claims. It may very well be that somewhere down the line there are additional settlements which would then revert to the whatever the original fund source was that the claims were paid from. But the discussion did come up when the item was first discussed for appropriation, and the possibility does exist, but it's one of those things. It's the claims are there. They're valid. They're valid now. And when the rest of the settlements might occur is anyone's guess.
Great. Follow-up question on that. Mr. Hogan, didn't the legislature appropriate money for the intertie and then reappropriate the balance last year, I believe it was last year, with the understanding that they would go ahead and appropriate monies when the actual claim came through?
I think that's correct, Mr. Chairman. That's the way I recall it.
Thank you.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, in the case of corrections, we did submit after the introduction of the bill a major medical cost increase for the Department of Corrections. That's in Section 31. That's the significant difference there. Basically, there are greater than anticipated medical care requirements for inmates than the budget originally provided for. I would point out that at one time, when we prepared the memo to send to the committee, we proposed it as a delete add supplemental. We have since felt that there's some interest in not going that route, so we have provided here the request for the $1,124,000, but would administratively restrict the long areas that exist in the corrections budget for additional lapse at the end of the current fiscal year. So the correspondence that the committee members probably have originally discussing this item, we will do the exact same maneuver administratively to basically cover the cost of this item. With regard to education, again, there is a miscellaneous claims item that was not in the original bill for stale warrants and so on. The other item, 33, is a settlement that escaped our
knowledge in January when we put the appropriation bill together. Basically, it is a court-approved settlement, administrative law judge-approved settlement between Southwest Regional School District and the Department of Education over exactly what the item was, but I think you have the decision or the settlement agreement in your file.
Right, we do have it back here, the federal appeals decision.
Right. Fish and Game, no significant change, slight increase in miscellaneous claims numbers. Governor's office is essentially a submitted claim items, security, transition expenses. The health and social services.
Representative Pichot.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the transition expenses, how did you decide how much money to take from the governor's contingency fund for transition expenses versus how much to put into a supplemental request?
Mr. Chairman, the Representative Pichot, the when the transition was in progress, the prior governor simply made money available from a variety of sources where it was still available for that purpose. The thought of Governor Cooper is that he would like to see some of this restored because the transition was just barely provided for. I think some of it came from appropriations that were really for other purposes. Some of it came from the contingency fund. Some of it came from some of the other accounts in the office of the governor. And it's the feeling of the administrative director now that basically the budget is just a little too tight to get through the...
Where would these funds go back to? I assume the expenses have been paid.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Pichot, I think what I'd better do is get you a precise listing of where the reimbursements would physically go. I don't know which accounts they would be. They would beef up. So I will get that information.
Okay. Any more on the governor's? Continue.
Health and Social Services has a major series of adjustments that's probably best outlined. I believe someone is here from the department, but there is a new memorandum that basically superseded the original presentation. It's a memorandum dated March 9th in which they summarize the change and go through an item by item explanation of the increases and the shifts sought. Breaks down into two areas. Caseload increases for AFDC, general relief, post-mortem, and old age assistance. Facilities costs were just very tight in the current year budget with restriction. We thought very seriously of releasing restrictions in Alaska Psychiatric and McLaughlin, but then decided to take a uniform position, and also Fairbanks Youth Facility, to take a uniform position, hold all the restrictions in place, and come in with a supplemental for the programs to demonstrate the precise areas of need and give the legislature a chance to respond to it as an issue. So that's basically what it is. There's one new item that was not there before, the residential care for $90,000, and that is described also, I believe, in a memorandum that was sent over to the committee yesterday.
Yes,
Riffson Cove. Thank you. Say that someone from the department is going to address some of these at this point.
I think
we have somebody here. If you did you want
here?
just a general thing, and maybe Mr. Hogan can answer it. I don't know. I'm just a little, I'd like a, just a little more explanation of what the meaning of these general changes are, if you feel it's better to go into specifics to reference future documents and so forth. I don't want to belabor the discussion, but when the commissioner was in today with the criminal justice group, she was speaking about youth facilities in Nome and Bethel, and I guess Nome possibly having enough funds to get some operating funds, Bethel none. And when we look at what is happening in juvenile corrections, that seemed like kind of a scary thing to say. We didn't have the opportunity to pursue that. And likewise, the Medicaid longevity bonus component, I would appreciate a little information on to see where that's headed. In other words, these, and then you mentioned API, and the figures here are somewhat dramatic, and then you speak of issues that you feel need to be brought up specifically to the legislature. So I don't know if it's appropriate at this meeting, but I sure would like to see a little of that sorted out, and it's up to the chair, really. If this is the time to do it, great. If not, I'm certainly ready to do it at the right time.
Mr. Chairman, I think some of the questions Representative Dahl is alluding to for some of the other institutions are not really covered in the supplemental. For instance, the decision to open the Fairbanks Youth Facility was made in mid-February, I believe, and the original decision was to go ahead and release, actually it was made in early February, to go ahead and release the restriction. Then the advisability of holding all the restrictions in place became paramount in our thinking, and we went forward with the supplemental. The other items you're addressing are probably subsequent to that in your discussions with the department on the 88 budget and current status of other similar programs.
By restrictions, you're speaking of the 10% restriction in operating funds.
Right. But this was the only one we specifically addressed in the supplemental forum, the one in Fairbanks.
Then, Mr. Chairman, if I may, there's just two that I would appreciate an explanation for at this time, since obviously the other is going to have to be taken up at subcommittee, and that is just sort of an updated statement on the Medicaid longevity bonus item and API. There must be information I don't have. I can't understand the meaning of this cut. Maybe you could just comment on those two so that I would at least have those clear in my mind since they're so large.
This
Medicaid longevity bonus, the deletion of 5022 and API, the cut of 372. Could you comment on those, or am I misreading the document in some way?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I think what we're showing here is a change, and I think it's rather than follow that chain, if you have the March 9th
yes, I have
revised
that
memo, I think I would concentrate on what the department now sees as its major requirements. Basically, in the case of Medicaid, I believe they have discovered internal funds to handle that and are now simply have reduced the request based on the internal funds. I believe it's the availability of certain federal receipts that.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, does this depend upon the passage of the longevity bonus legislation?
No.
You're saying they've just come up with $500,000 in the agency somewhere?
I believe there is a federal appropriation, a federal balance that can be used to offset that requirement.
How about the cuts of 372 at API? What's the explanation of that?
Again, it's based on the refined requirements at this time. They have gone over their entire supplemental and basically rearranged based on the on about, I'd say, two and a half months of additional operating experience.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good questions. Continue.
Department of Law, there are no significant changes there. Slight increase in miscellaneous judgments. I believe the committee has the revised list of judgments that account for the only difference between the bills introduced and now. Department of Law, excuse me, Military Affairs, the new item that...
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to highlight the Weiss versus State. I wonder if you could tell us the importance of that particular judgment.
26. It's under court order to pay the plaintiffs until the resolution of the mental health plan's ownership question this amount. I take that as sort of an earnest money on substantial payments yet to come, and this would be of paramount importance, I think, for the state to make this payment in as timely a manner as possible. It is a court-appointed obligation. The flood control item, the river dusting, is the only item that is added. Since this is a springtime occurrence, it is of some urgency to the department. And basically, that's the only addition when the bill is introduced there. I did not have a chance to check this item before, but I'm reasonably certain that the Utsunawu Heritage Grant has been paid. So we had a problem there changed direction that I believe has been resolved, and I believe that the grant has been paid, but I will confirm that with the chairman.
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but since that was an appropriation in my district, I would appreciate understanding what you're saying. Maybe is that the appropriate time, or now if it's the appropriate time?
My recollection of that problem was that it was a temporary casualty in the restriction exercise, and I think with the change of administrations that it has been paid now, is my understanding. So the problem originally associated with that, originally requiring the supplemental, has been administratively dealt with, and I believe the grant has been paid, and the project is underway.
If that turns out not to be correct, could you please try to let me know at the earliest convenience?
One item that is a change, not a general fund item, but of significant importance, the original bill contained sections dealing with the closeout of the recorder's office. The revised bill, again, non-general fund, deals with an amount of money necessary to continue the recorder's office from program receipts, $95,000, through the end of the current fiscal year. This is the remaining sum that was in the ill-fated RP brought before budget and audit earlier this session. So that is section 30 in the proposed committee substitute, or proposed substitute. And that would keep the office operating at the current level through the end of the current fiscal year. The major item in the supplemental for DNR is worthy of some comment, and that is, of course, the first appearance of a fire suppression supplemental in about 8 or 10 years. As we're perhaps well aware, with the demise of the rainy day fund last year, it is now practice of the department to bring the fire suppression program into the budget process, since there is no remaining ability to go against an account or fund to fund the fire suppression program. This amount is our best estimate of what would be required to get us through the spring fire season, if you will. And there is a corresponding request for an appropriation of some almost $7 million in the 88 budget to provide the funding for the next fiscal year. So this should carry us through, barring any unforeseen, extremely bad fire season, it should carry us through to the end of the current fiscal year. There is also a legal settlement there, the Siri Land Rehabilitation Settlement. And that's the only...
Rep. Parika?
I just have a couple of general questions. The first one is on the, well, a bunch of sections around section 15 through 21 in that neighborhood. I was wondering if you could explain what goes on there when there is a shortage of funding. Are those types of increased demands the result of the department adopting some regulations and then everybody who is eligible under those regulations gets taken care of, or are those more along the lines of first come, first serve type programs, and when the money runs out, you cut it back?
Mr. Chairman, which section was this?
Well, sections 15 through 21 of the CS with a lot of DHSS type programs.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, 15, 16, 17, and 18 are really all caseload driven, do not presume changes in regulation, but basically adult public assistance, increased caseload, general leave assistance, increased caseload, court-ordered autopsies, increased number of them, and in the case of Alaska Psychiatric, there is a shortfall in federal funds due to a decreased patient count. In the case of Operation McLaughlin and Fairbanks, McLaughlin simply had too tight a budget to operate on. They have been operating at a very, very full capacity. And that was part of the reason in Section 20 that the governor requested funding for opening the Fairbanks Youth Facility, the new wing of the Fairbanks Youth Facility, in February rather than waiting for the 88 budget year. It was to take the pressure off the McLaughlin Youth Center. So virtually all of those API is somewhat affected by a drop in federal revenues, but all the others are either numbers of inhabitants at the institution or numbers of people applying for the various types of relief.
I guess what I was wondering, are those caseloads discretionary, or is that just whoever comes in, gets taken care of?
Well, they're discretionary to the extent that the state can decide which programs it is going to have. But once the programs are up and formulated and set up, then it's pretty much whoever is proven to be eligible and comes in the door.
I can continue.
Yes.
Also on Section 13, could you tell me what are the risk management costs listed there? Is that a premium to an insurance company, or is that just a actuarial reserve we're just going to set aside some money? This is on the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities risk management costs.
I see, 13. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's Representative Rieger. That is the cost of the state's insurance coverage required primarily for the marine highway system. And in the 87 budget year, we have had some risk management adjustments due to higher premiums for state insurance. The one that was simply not able to be absorbed by either the Department of Administration or the operating agency was this one. That's basically, this consists of the increased cost of insuring the marine transportation fleet.
I guess what I was driving at is, are we paying that as a premium to some other insurer, or is that just money that's put into the state's self-insurance pool?
The commissioner is here. I suspect it's a little of both, but...
Premiums to an outside insurer? Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. I understand that across the board, we've seen a leveling of insurance funds. So cost. Last year, it's getting redefined more and more to put the onus on the insurance companies and their operations. Why is this an exception to that? Where did we go? Did we go wrong? Did we have accidents? What was awful that we're allowing this to take place? Not, obviously, it did, but why not? Have you looked at other vendors? Based on last year's information and somewhere in the process, I must say that I'm a little curious as to why a budget amendment would be required to handle it.
Again, Mr. Chairman, this one was a casualty of the restriction item, and it could have been released at this time, but the governor's decision was across the boards in the budget not to release restrictions. Our problem was, if we started releasing restrictions, then you wouldn't have any confidence on where we would stop. And so we could come forward with supplementals on the one hand and be releasing restrictions on the other, and no one would ever know where we were in the process.
Basic points, keep your deficit figures.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Reardon. Thank you.
Yes.
Just to follow up on that a little more, I guess it goes back to the restrictions. Were the restrictions lump sum restrictions, or were they line items all the way down through the appropriations and allocations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rieger, they were lump sum assignments to a department. And the original reductions for DOT came back with a configuration for marine highways. My recollection of this was that I think the department at the time underestimated, thought someone else was going to pay, or somehow otherwise failed to provide for this. I don't recall this issue coming up in the restriction exercise. It came up afterward. So somewhere in the department, my recollection is that someone lost track of that.
In essence, the restrictions were lump sum restrictions, and then the add-backs to the restrictions identify specific items that are fairly important items.
In the budget that came out of the restriction exercise, the reductions were identified, and they were assigned. The restrictions were assigned to certain specific places. My recollection on this one, on the history of this one, is that someone failed to incorporate that in as an operating requirement. And it came up after the exercise had been laid out. And then there wasn't a, without curtailing service, there wasn't a place to absorb it.
I just have one last question then, and that's, but gets back to the settlements. There's you know, in a variety of places, Section 23 and Section 29 and Section 33. There's reference to settlements. What's the nature of those settlements? Is it something that the state assigned the document and the courts ordered it, or is that something that the administration agreed that they would seek funds from the legislature for, and it's kind of a questionable thing whether the money will be there or not?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's Representative Rieger. That's the case, and I'm reasonably certain that there is either an administrative law document or a court document in the files on each of these. We've been fairly cautious about using that title if indeed that isn't the case. For example, the customary one on law, we gather together the small judgments, the $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 ones, make a listing of them and call those miscellaneous judgments. The larger ones, like the Siri one, like the Weiss one, we tend to float out as an item so that they're clear and visible. But there are signed agreements. In the case of Syria, it was signed, I believe, without going through the court process, but the other two were
were products of either administrative hearing or a court decision.
In general, what happens if the legislature doesn't fund those settlements?
Mr. Chairman, I hesitate to answer that. I suspect that I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the status. I think it would depend on each particular agreement. I think you'd probably work back with the court. The court settlement, for instance, the Weiss case, I think the state would have to find some money to pay that from some existing appropriation source. Backing from that to the Siri case, which is more of an administrative hearing within the department, same thing might apply. It's a signed agreement by the department. I suppose the person, the group to whom the money is owed could petition that it has to be paid out of some sources in the department. They might have to go to a hearing or file a complaint to get that addressed. But we can certainly ask the people in the Department of Law to provide us a thumbnail sketch of what would happen if there were no money specifically appropriated for these.
Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Continue on with Department of Natural Resources, finishing up. Is there any questions on Department of
Natural Resources? Yeah, one, Mr. Chairman. Jay, you may have explained that Parks Management $100,000, and I may have missed it. Could you go over it again?
Mr. Chairman, I think let's see. We took the item out. We originally had that prepared as a delete add to assure the payment of that particular grant.
Oh, you mean the Kusnawudu?
Yes.
Oh.
And internally, that was resolved so that the problem of apparent non-payment of that, I think, has been resolved, and I think the department has agreed to go ahead and honor the grant. Originally, that was not the case. So in the effort to reduce the bill, shall we say, to straightforward appropriations, we resolved the problem administratively, and my recollection is, unfortunately, the analyst went home sick today, but I'm quite certain that the department has signed the grant agreement now and is in process of carrying out the program as envisioned. That's the item that I will get back to the committee on as soon as you return. We just basically resolved this.
You
this
found
week.
The money elsewhere, I guess, in other words, in the department.
Yeah, right.
That would have to come within an appropriation. Yes, sir.
There was specific language in the appropriation that this grant be paid, and there was some confusion within the department about whether or not they were going to do it, and that confusion has been resolved in favor of their doing it.
So it's not, if I can just kind of follow up on it, I'm trying to get my own mind. There really wasn't a matter of not having the money to pay for it. You had the authority to pay it, and you have now exercised that authority.
Yes. Yes.
I don't see why you... I got... forget it. I won't dwell on it anymore.
You'll bring us back up on that. Continue on. Public safety.
Public safety, just an item... small item of miscellaneous claims and warrants. Department of Revenue, we have two old favorites there, political campaign credits and child care credits. These are payments owed to people who filed for both credits prior to the
expiration of the program prior to June 30th of 86. So unless there is some activity to reinstate those two credit systems again, those should be the last payments required under that.
Representative Fischel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got the an AG's opinion from Mr. Baldwin on this topic, and I guess I want to be clear in my mind what the distinction that you were drawing on okaying these from 86, but not, in essence, acknowledging or trying to fund anything for FY 87. I want to make sure that when we use the appropriation or lack of an appropriation for our cutoff, what the difference is between zero and some amount less than a full amount.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Porcheau, I would hazard a guess that it's a hazy area. To me, the appearance of a zero in an appropriation is fairly conclusive that the program is gone. I recognize that from a legal standpoint, the cleanest way to make it gone is to take the program off the books. It's the administration's feeling that since some payments, many payments, were made for people who filed in 86, that it was fair and equitable to go through and take all of the people and treat them the same, so that everyone who had in timely manner filed for these credits in 86, the last year in which there was some funding for this, was taken care of, and then not seek funding for the 87 portion where none was given originally anyway.
Were there records kept, I assume, of those people? I think people in my household at least got some rejection notices.
Right.
Those are automatically then picked up again? Or?
I would assume so. I would assume that's what they based their claim, I mean their dollar value of the claims on, that they sent out a rejection notice due to the lack of funding, but still have the document by which the application was made. The justification of these both is that they have records of people who filed within the proper time frames, and that's what the series of claims is based on.
Are there any lawsuits pending on this?
I don't know whether there are any lawsuits. I've seen some nasty letters, but I don't know whether there are any lawsuits.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're only talking about $100 maximum apiece.
Right.
On the political end. What about the child care?
I'm not familiar with what the terms were there, but I think it was more than, it was based on up to, was it 500 or something? I don't know the maximum that someone can claim.
And if I could follow that with one other, what about claims? Is the rejection notice the same for claims made after June 30th, 86, as before June 30th, 86, that didn't have enough, that you didn't have enough money to pay?
Well, they would be appropriations is actually sought to be a supplemental for fiscal 86.
Okay, but really, also, you could make the argument that we're talking about calendar tax years. Too, it seems to me, and it seems to me you could certainly make the, next year we could see a supplemental for the last half of 86, fiscal year 86, because really, why should we deny somebody the credit or whatever, just because he happened to file his in July as opposed to June? I don't know. I don't see the big distinction myself, but. If we're not going to get into any legal problems, we're not facing any legal challenges, again, maybe we ought to just defund it.
The way they identify it, Mr. Chairman, it's indicated in the attached charts, the outstanding liability for claims received on or before June 30th, 1986, and they cite the amount. A supplemental appropriation of 476 would pay all claims
filed in FY86. Most of the records of payments for the department are accounted for in a fiscal year manner. In other words, they charge payments to individuals, including claims reimbursements against specific fiscal years. Claims filed after June 30th would not be affected by this appropriation request, in the opinion of the department.
Thank you. Go.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask, through the chair, to Representative Porcheau, the Attorney General's opinion that you referenced, is that a new Attorney General's opinion differing from the one that we had a little while ago, a year ago, that said exactly the opposite, that these were legal obligations of the state?
Through the chair, that's an excellent question. I think you'd have to read it for yourself to see if it agreed or disagreed.
But it's a new opinion.
It's a new opinion, and it does reference the older opinion, and it's a...
Could you restate to me the conclusion with which you started this line of questioning that's found in that?
Mr. Chairman, the concluding one is we believe that absent a valid appropriation to finance the payment of political campaign or child care credits, the failure to appropriate money for the 87 fiscal year effectively negates any entitlement to reimbursement.
I see.
But they still substantiate their 1984 opinion that a legal claim could be brought against the state for entitlement under an existing statutory authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Porcheau. I guess my in a conversation like this, I think I have a right to venture an opinion, which is that I should contact all of my contributors and advise them that maybe the deadline is also subject to some review under these circumstances, and really that they ought to get their applications in explaining that they've been advised by the state that the appropriation is the guiding thing and not the law. And having taken that advice, supported by that Attorney General's opinion, should question whether that's good advice or not, and finding that it's not, get reimbursed. I'd like to point out that the chairman has, I shouldn't say that, the committee has introduced House Bill 184, which would make this a matter of law, as I think it should be, and I certainly support either moving on this or going for a supplemental and a revision of the deadline date so that everybody gets equal treatment. But, you know, I just feel compelled to comment. It just seems somewhat strange. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is on about the $5.8 million.
Is there any further questions on these two subjects? Go ahead, Representative Brown.
Thank you. I've been attempting to get some information about this supplemental request for the $5.8 million in the APA suit, and I've received several things in writing. I was just wondering whether the administration or any member of the current administration had reviewed this settlement to determine its appropriateness and to look beyond, the face value of, or the face request made by the APA before submitting this for consideration of the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I think it's probably fair to say that with the most recent change in headship of the power authority, I would assume that an in-depth review of that by the current administration, if you will, probably was not done. Obviously, the material that's submitted in the form of this appropriation request was prepared by the prior director and the prior administration. The whole subject of what is actually owed each contractor, what the legal liabilities are, is I'm sure in most of these construction contract situations, one that's going to be argued about in many different instances over the course of the actual payment of settlement. This was the best estimate of the authority at the time we submitted the appropriation request in January.
Do you know who did the Department of Law or an outside counsel represent the state in this matter?
I don't know the answer to that.
What steps is the administration taking to keep us from getting into situations like this in the future?
Mr. Chairman, I would assume that under the new director of the Power Authority, we would perhaps anticipate a much more stringent look at project management and project costs. And what, precisely what steps he would institute, I really can't say at this time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I raise this is that, you know, one of the provisions of the settlement is that any amount, well, maybe I should back up and say, you know, what happened was that a contractor for the state sued the state for $15 million, and that claim is what's being settled with this $5.8 million appropriation that's requested. Then together, that contractor and the state are going to turn around and sue the engineer for claims in excess of $20 million, and this agreement provides that the money would be split 60-40 between the state and Susitna contractors. So after you deduct the $5.8 million that the state would pay, the state comes out roughly $7 million to the good, and Susitna contractors comes out more than $14 million to the good. And, you know, I realize that, you know, it's difficult to debate it, and that's why I've had a hard time, you know, finding out. We asked the department for information, and they said we would get it from the Power Authority. When the director of the Power Authority appeared, he knew absolutely nothing about it. And, you know, it's just, it does seem, you know, that there are some questions here that would bear further looking into before we just assume that this is a good settlement for the state, because it seems to me that the downside would be if you didn't go forward with this, that we would be back, or presumably back, dealing with the original claim. And, you know, I have some questions about this whole situation. I, you know, would just wonder who in the administration is looking at it, because it seems that, you know, it's just been passed down without any real scrutiny of what went on there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, the one of the advantages, disadvantages, if you will, of the public corporation structure is that it is the public corporation itself that is responsible and accountable for matters just like this. We've had an immediate change in the headship of that. We certainly would carry forward the committee's concern, but I think until Mr. LaRush kind of gets his feet on the ground and has a chance to review this, I'm sort of hard pressed to bring any new light on what he might add in the way of better controls on this particular situation.
You have a couple more things in commerce, and I think we've got it pretty much complete before subcommittee work. You're done with two more things. You get, then I'll do that.
I think we've. Yes. The others were fish and game license vendors and the co-op tax. That's right. The pass-through tax. So that's simply we are anticipating slightly greater receipts than were originally budgeted. Transportation is miscellaneous claims, and the marine highways risk management costs.
Representative Franklin Boyer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, can you explain the miscellaneous claims and sale warrants?
Mr. Chairman, they're all in one section, but they appear under the heading of various departments. And what it really amounts to is, for one reason or another, there are a variety of warrants written or claims against the state that never meet the accounting books within a two-year period. Either people are written a warrant by the state to pay for some service and they put it in a drawer and forget about it for 2 years, and there are numerous of those instances, or someone bills the state for a service and it gets lost by the agency or lost in the mail or whatever. But in either case, the guiding rule is they are to be basically a third fiscal year from the current one. They're 2 years old, and they cannot, by state law, be addressed out of either current appropriations and the prior appropriation to which they, or against which they could have been lodged, is long since repealed and lapsed. So it's basically the cleaning up of old buildings
or old warrants written that that somehow never never made it through the process.
Thanks.
Gripson Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noted that there isn't a supplemental request yet for the CNRA, and I'm curious over the, about something that I just became aware of over the weekend, and that dealt with a an Anchorage appeal of the full and true assessment under the revenue sharing program, and it appeared that Anchorage now may well be entitled to an additional $1.9 million roughly, and I'm curious whether or not the department or whether or not the governor is going to seek a supplemental appropriation to deal with those communities that receive or may well receive a reduction in revenue sharing as a result of the appeal.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, this is a late-breaking development. The item first came to my attention at a staff meeting last week when the discussion of the situation seemed to indicate that we would go and pay all of the municipalities the agreed-upon payments under the municipal assistance program. Then, as you're well aware, the court prevented that occurrence. So I have not had a chance to discuss with the governor his feelings on a supplemental one way or another. I guess one of the things we would need to sort out before anyone did anything on that is what the outcome of the process is going to be. I know the department is working on trying to figure out what various communities would be owed in the should the payment have to be made to Anchorage as it should have been calculated rather than it was calculated. But I have not had a chance to talk to the governor one way or another about how he would respond to the supplemental request.
Mr. Chairman, what is the timeline on decision on the appeal itself?
I'm not familiar with that. If there's someone here from CNRA, they would be far more conversant with that since they're dealing with all parties in this matter. But I'm not familiar with any of their timeline situations.
One additional question, Mr. Chairman. There's currently pending in the House HES Committee a Senate supplemental appropriation for pupil transportation and tuition payments. And I'm curious what the rationale was in OMB for not including a supplemental appropriation to fully fund or restore funding for particularly pupil transportation in as much as it is drawn down by a shortfall in tuition payments and because of the contractual nature of pupil transportation in school districts, why it was that you chose not to have a supplemental in to take care of those districts which are short funded.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, it was our opinion during the process of preparing for supplementals that was not apparently an item that convinced us of the necessity to do it. As you're well aware, in the revised budget, we did address some additional funding for that program. But the decision was made not to simply not to do it in the supplemental.
The choice being that it's not something that's mandated, or what policy call was made?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, the pupil transportation has been a sort of a flywheel in that system. It's been the place where reductions have been absorbed, either rightly or wrongly. Historically, our thought in addressing the issue in 88 was to try and redress that to some extent to set a standard, in this case 75%. But conversely, I guess you could argue that in the 87 process, our thought was just to leave the restriction results exactly as they were.
Mr. Chairman, is it would you suggest that this bill before us today is the more appropriate place to deal with the supplemental and perhaps an amendment to the bill is in order?
Mr. Chairman, this is obviously a supplemental appropriation, and I would be loath to tell the legislature what they can and cannot put in a supplemental appropriation. I think the this is obviously an appropriate vehicle for it. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify an earlier topic before the pupil transportation, that on the municipal or the revenue sharing allocation. Maybe kind of a rhetorical question, but was the original or the 87 revised appropriation level, wasn't all of that funding available for revenue sharing? We're not really short money in a typically in a budget item, are we?
In with regard to the Anchorage situation?
Right.
We're not short money, but basically, I would describe it, Mr. Chairman, that we would have allocated it differently had we had all the facts, all the fiscal facts in hand at the time. So the same amount of money is being parceled out. The difference is that based on the allocations the department or the evaluations and the allocations that stem from those that the department had up through a week or 10 days ago, people were given verbal commitments, if you will, communities around the state, that this is your sum. With the outcome as it is now, if the court directs that the state go and recalculate the figures for Anchorage, then within the same amount of money, they simply couldn't make those payments to everyone else at the same level. There would have to be some sort of formalistic reduction of those. That's basically where the situation is.
But the rule, the way the allocation is made, is just by a standard set of
rules. That's true.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative Brown?
Thank you. On the supplemental appropriation requested by the Real Estate Commission, Department of Commerce, for $39,000, what steps were taken by that agency to try to serve monies? Did they take the salary reduction? Did the partially exempt employees take the salary reduction? Did they hold positions open? I mean, why is it that they are live within the amount available?
Mr. Chairman, basically, I don't know the question, the answer to the question on whether or not they took salary reductions. I think they did not keep positions vacant to make ends meet, so to speak. They did make some administrative effort to curtail their expenditures for things like travel and communications. They scaled down their meeting schedules and some of their office cost schedules. The basic problem, though, of course, is one of the receipts that they had anticipated to be forthcoming from the program failed to measure up to expectations. So there is a shortage in the program receipts portion of their budget. And that's the significant difference that's occurred. They have made some substantial effort to curtail their operating expenditures. It is my understanding that they did not do that with regard to holding positions.
Yeah, the subcommittee will be looking at that one because they overestimated their program receipts, and we'll probably zero that out. They're going to have to eat that and maybe work 4 days versus 5 days for the rest of the year here. We'll be looking at that one. Any further questions? I'd like the, anybody would you like to testify, Sally? No? No. I'd like the subcommittee chairmen to go through and look at their various components and how it affects 87, 88. And if I don't hear from you by Monday at 9:30, then I assume everything is okay with your subcommittees. Our first subcommittee meeting is at 9:30, Monday morning in my office. This completes our agenda for today. House Finance is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.